Okay, just had to do some little technical things there. This is going to be kind of an interesting talk. I've never done one of these public talks before where I'm moderating and talking to a live audience at the same time. So this will be kind of fun for everybody, including those online. The reason I chose to do this was because much of the talk has to do with Illuminate specifically as a technology in teaching. So it made sense to try this out and give you a sense of what this is really like. For everybody. So my name is Lawton Shaw. I'm with the Center for Science at Athabasca University. I'm the chemistry professor there. And I'm going to talk about a pilot project that we did in the chemistry area last year. It was a lot of fun, and we've got some interesting data for you, and I'm going to try to do a demonstration in the talk as well. An outline of the talk looks like this. I'm going to start off with some background on what it's like to teach chemistry as a discipline, and some of the challenges around doing that in distance education. Talk about the pilot project and how we structured it, what it looked like for everybody. Go into a little demonstration, and then talk about the student survey results that were collected, and then move into conclusions and acknowledgments. And we'll see, it might take around 40, 45 minutes, and then we'll go to some questioning. Okay, so like I mentioned, I'm a chemist. And teaching chemistry is a lot different than what you'd expect teaching something like an arts-based discipline where people are doing a lot of text readings and analysis. Chemistry is taught very visually. If you take a look at a chemistry textbook, you'll see what I mean. Just open up any in a library and actually look on any given page in a chapter at the body of the text compared to what's on the page. What you will find is that there really isn't a lot of, hang on, I'm going to tell this person to put their hand in. Oh, I thought they'd, just hang on. Yeah, they're gone. Sorry, Chuck. I'm sure that was accidental. Back to teaching chemistry. If you look in a chemistry textbook, you'll find that there really isn't a lot of body of text on a page. It's maybe a paragraph or two. The rest of the page is taken up with figures and equations, and what's happening there is just the language of chemistry and how it's taught. There's a lot of use of chemical symbols all the way through, things like what's on this little picture here. We don't write carbon, we write C, just to simplify. So there's a shorthand notation going on. Because people don't really look at molecules with their eyes, we have ways of expressing that differently. So we have abstractions of molecules, and what's on here is, again, one of these visual abstractions. Molecules don't really look like this. Right? Not at all. What they look like is something completely different, we think. But this is how I would be talking to a student if I was in a classroom or if I had them in my office during an office hour. I used to teach in a classroom, and this was actually taken from a classroom weight work that I had available at the time. I just saved it and brought it in. And you see it's a molecule, and we're looking at a part of the molecule and a 3D representation of it. That's what all the wedges and dashes are about. And also, there's a lot of mathematical descriptions of chemical processes that we deal with all the time, and we'll get into those right now. So you sort of get a sense of what we have to do in the discipline, because chemistry is about a natural science. It's about natural things and molecules. We talk about it differently than in other areas. Teaching chemistry by distance education relies heavily on the strength of course materials. So a student gets a course pack, and they're dealing with that textbook with all of the figures, all of the information. It's very visual, even though it's in a book. And they're also supplemented with individualized study and tutoring by phone and email, where if they're having a problem, they can call up their tutor on the phone and go through a problem with them, or they can try emailing back and forth, trying to get an answer that way. You can sort of imagine, though, that teletutoring lacks a sort of visual richness that you would get if you instead had a piece of paper that you could work on with a student. And that's really part of the challenge of all of this. I was warned early when I started with Athabasca University that sometimes you'll come across a student who's very visual in how they learn. which means they rely heavily on pictures and drawings to get through the material. And if you have them on the phone, it can be very challenging if that's all you've got. You know, you're trying to explain something verbally when it relies heavily on a picture somewhere. Oops. It's easy to double click too fast. So the question then is, how can technology be used to visually enhance individualized study tutoring? And there is some technology available, and I'm actually using it right now on the screen in a whiteboard. So online whiteboards is what we're going to try out. I'm assuming everybody knows what a whiteboard is and has seen one of these before. And those of you in the room and on screens at home can see that the Illuminate slides are in a whiteboard right now. They've been imported in. And over on the side, I've got a bunch of drawing tools that are available. And I can sort of squiggle around with these and draw on it just like I would a blackboard or a piece of paper. The difference is this goes across the internet to the other person's computer screen. So everyone can see this in real time. We can be sharing just like this on a chemistry problem. Okay, so a student and I can go back and forth and talk about something and share pictures and drawings and equations and get through material very quickly and very effectively. And so that's what this talk is all about. This is just another whiteboard talking about some basic features. You've got a canvas, you've got a variety of tools, and of course some pretty colors at the bottom to make things visually appealing for those so inclined. Question is, how would you implement something like this when we've got this structure in place at Athabasca University that's very based on the individualized study tutor model, where students are assigned a single tutor, they contact them by phone and email, and that's about it. So there are some question marks about how to do this, and there are options, and these were sort of looked at and explored before I got into the project. Option one is something that was tried out here at AU as well, and Conrad's in the room, so you can chuckle at this and comment later if you like. I'm calling it Phone Plus Whiteboard, and this is a very easy way to implement a whiteboard technology. Essentially, if a tutor is on the phone with a student and they're talking about something and they run into a difficulty where they just have to have the visual, they can both log into a whiteboard online. These are fairly affordable. And you've got the phone, and you've got your mouse, and you're working. Okay. And it's actually very effective if you have a speakerphone. So on my end, I've got a speakerphone. It was fairly easy for me. For students, I'm not sure if it was quite as simple. But it worked, and when I did try it, Conrad and Julie let me try this out with their system. It was great. The students that were with me on the phone and the whiteboard really got a kick out of it. We got through a lot of material really fast. So that's one way to do this. It's very easy, it's quite effective, very affordable. So that's one option. Another option, and this is an example taken from the web, there is a company in the States doing this commercially, sort of a commercial educational company, where they have one-on-one tutor-student interactions and a whiteboard. Okay. There is unfortunately no audio, so they can't be talking between each other, but they've got all the whiteboard and the sort of chat or texting available. And it looks something like this, and unfortunately it's almost impossible to see here given the size of the screen. But I've got the link to this at the end of the presentation if you want to go back and look at it. Essentially, you see a whiteboard there on this screen capture, and the red and blue lines are the tutor and student going back and forth in text, asking questions and answering, so on and so forth. The tools along the side, sort of in here, and down along the bottom, are kind of interesting because they've added equation editors, math symbols, chemistry symbols, so it makes things a lot easier when you can just pull down a little button and put a molecule template on the screen, for example, or an equation. So that's a possibility. But unfortunately, like I said, this does not have audio, and you should all know that audio is a very fast way to communicate with people. Verbal is much faster than typing. So it's nice to have that verbal connection. A third option that would give us a whiteboard and an audio in an online world would be the sort of MSN approach, which I'm sure many are familiar with. Microsoft has been dealing with this kind of thing for over a decade. starting with something called NetMeeting many, many years ago. And you can have a chat line, so people texting back and forth with their friends. You can have audio there. You can have video conversations, and they've got a whiteboard built into it. So all of those features are there. It could be a great tool for doing one-on-one tutor-student interactions. There are problems, though, with this particular technology with MSN. It's not designed for multiple participants. It's very difficult to have more than one person involved compared to something like Illuminate, where you seem to get 10 people online all sharing this. Also, MSN's servers tend to get sluggish during prime time if anybody used it. So we've got a problem there. And also, you have to be a member of MSN. So you've got to have a Hotmail account and all this. Not everybody has one, so you've got an issue there. However, it sure looks pretty. And this is a screen capture from my own personal life with my family. I've been using this with my wife and my in-laws who live in Melbourne. I've been using this for about a decade since NetMeeting came in. My father-in-law is a systems analyst. He's retired now, so he's all into all this techie stuff. And what we've got here, there's Tony, my father-in-law, up at the top, sitting in his kitchen. And down there I've got my three-year-old, who's two at the time. And what they're doing is playing around with the whiteboard, of all things. This wasn't staged. They were actually having fun, and they've been getting more advanced. My little guy is drawing little dinosaurs in the whiteboard now. And it's just a fun way for kids and grandparents to connect. So you can sort of see the power of this. And you can also sort of imagine what this would be like if you were actually doing schoolwork, doing chemistry or some other discipline on the whiteboard and talking back and forth. It's like you've got somebody in the room. The fourth option, and what we're here for today, is really the Illuminate approach. Illuminate doesn't have video, and that's okay, we can do it without video. But it's got chat, it's got an audio component, and it's got a whiteboard built right into it. So front and center on the screen, you've got your whiteboard, you've got your participants over on the side there. You can chat back and forth if you like, using that direct messaging window. So we've got a really exciting technology here that we could use. And so the history of this project is when I found out about this, I said, I've got to try this out in chemistry. We've got to try it out in our courses. And what would this look like if we did so? Well, if you had multiple students logged into Illuminate at the same time, this would look a lot like a drop-in tutorial room that you would see at a residential university. So any of you who have taken science courses, for example, at a university will know that faculties of science in their departments will often set aside a room somewhere where during the day they'll have a TA or a prof or somebody else in the room, and students can just drop in, pop in, have their questions answered. Oftentimes students hang around and watch what's going on. They listen to what's happening with other students and the instructor because they can learn valuable things that way. So there's a component of what you could call a vicarious learning where students benefit from just the listening and watching of the tutor or instructor with the other students. Okay, it's very exciting possibilities. So here's our project. We called it the Online Synchronous Drop-In Tutorial using Illuminate. And this was a pilot project that we did here at Athabasca University in the chemistry area. It ran for 12 weeks last summer. It was three evenings a week, and we were structuring this kind of like a supplement to the regular individualized study tutoring. So tutors were maintaining their normal phone hours, doing that job, and we had this on top of everything. Three nights a week we ran this, Tuesday and Wednesday. We had general and environmental chemistries running, and then Thursday evenings we had organic chemistry. And we broke it up that way partly because of the tutor participation. There was myself, I did one night, another tutor who was very inclined to be physical analytical types of chemistry did another evening of general and environmental, and then one tutor did organic, and she's really the expert in organic chemistry in that group. So that's sort of how it worked. And we'll just continue with this, more descriptions of the project. The tutors who were involved did this voluntarily, and it was over and above their regular tutor workload, so they were paid at the normal rate for this over those 12 weeks. We did some training, And the training was really fun. It really involved the three of us just getting on Illuminate and mucking around, pretending to be the moderator and the student, and getting used to using some of the hardware that we provided. And we're going to get to that here. There is an important hardware component, and I've got some of it up here. I'll show it to you in a second. Everybody who's working as a tutor in this world really needs a tablet, or a graphic tablet. And so everybody was equipped with one of these. It's about 150 to 250 for a 6x8-inch tablet. So it's not too bad. You can buy cheaper ones that are smaller, but the smaller you go, the more difficult it is to use, because you've got this little pad that you're trying to draw on. That's better if you've got a little more space. And then, of course, microphone and speakers, and those are usually part of PCs anyway. Okay, so we'll continue on here. Students were sent weekly group emails to let them know about this. This was done by a blind copy email. I just got a class list from Learning Services and sent them out an announcement saying, here's your dates and times. And they were given a link to an anonymous survey that was done online using PSP Surveyor, which we have a license for here at AU. So students would go into this online survey, fill it out. When they completed it, they'd be given a link to the Illuminate class. So it's a way to make sure that you're getting some survey data. Everything was anonymous, but we're collecting data the whole time on how this is working. And also the type of student who is interested. We'll get to that. So I'd like to do a quick little demo of what this is all about. For those of you in the room, I'm just holding up the tablet here. Got it right here up at the computer. So just a nice little thing. Looks like a book, almost, the size of a book. And it works like a mouse. So I've got a stylus, just a little pen, and I just write on the tablet. And it's sort of, see what I mean? I'm just drawing there. Bit of a mess. But that's the idea. And after a little bit of practice, you can get really good at doing chemical structures. And I'll see if I'm any good at this anymore. It's been about a year since I was doing this regularly. But there's a carbon. Oop, there's a bond. There's another bond. I draw a little wedge showing that there's a bond coming out at me. There's something saying a bond's going back into the page, and a student can imagine what this looks like. Put some hydrogens on it. And I'm a little rusty, I'm afraid. It's a little easier when you're sitting at a desk, but you can get very good at this and do it very fast online. And you're sharing stuff with a student in real time while you're talking. So there's a real power here compared to audio only, and it's really neat. So what would happen is a student would come online and they would join us, just like some of these participants over on the side here. And I would get a little note saying so-and-so just joined, and I would go in and add them in on audio and so on and let them do things. And then I would start doing a little chat with them, saying, hi, and then I see you, can you hear me? And then we go through a quick audio check, usually it goes really smooth. And then we go, and I explain some of the rules of how we work, that we take turns. I go through one student's question, and then I ask the next one, and it's you. I keep going on down that list, and then we can go back to the first person if they're still there. And that's how it worked. And students were very well behaved, you'll be happy to know. There's good behavior all around. It was very positive. We didn't have a single problem with people writing silly comments on chat screens, juvenile type behavior. It didn't happen. So it was very good. Another benefit of using these whiteboards is you can save the whiteboard as a PDF after your session. And so this is a page taken from one evening's tutorial. So you see it's got the date stamp on there, August last year. And I was working through this example 6.4 in a textbook with a student, and it looks like it's about heat and water capacities. Some of you may have seen something like this before in the distant past. When I finish the question, you save it, a student can download it on the spot, and they don't have to take notes. So they've got a record there, and they usually feel pretty good about that. But they've got something, they've got the professor's comments, how did this guy do it? Okay, I want to look at it again, and they can see it. So very fun. Okay, we're done the description part of the talk. I'm going to get into talking about the survey results. The survey that was created in PSP Surveyor was actually quite complex. I did this for the reason that you can get very interesting information out the more complex you create a survey. So I'll just walk you through this. When a student goes into the online survey, they get a question. Okay. Have you used the online tutorial before? Yes or no? So if a student comes in the first time, it's a no, and that sends them off to a list of questions that basically measures their demographic profile. What's their age, their gender, where are they living, how many courses are they taking, what courses are they enrolled in, how long have they been in the course, how much contact have they had with a tutor before, and then questions about technology, how comfortable they feel, and so on. And then they'd be given a link to Illuminate, and off they go into the class, and they forget about it. Okay? They were asked to go back into the survey after they'd been through a session and complete an evaluation. And the way that would work is they'd go back into the same link, answer yes to the first question, and then they'd go into questions on number of visits, how they liked Illuminate, what did they do inside, and also a free response area where they could write comments. And most students gave us a lot of comments when they did so. And then they'd also be given a link to Illuminate if they wanted it. So for example, if they were coming back a second time, this was another way to get in. Okay, so the survey was linked right to the beginning of the class, and that's how we collected our data. Okay, the interesting thing, which is kind of fun, it's also kind of scary in this online world, that everybody can find out your IP address when you surf. So I was using this. I could collect people's IP addresses, and I could correlate responses and say, people who visit more frequently are like this kind of person, but correlating with their information that they gave in their demographic card. It's still anonymous, but I can tell that it came from the same computer. And so I can use that to do some interesting data analysis. Okay, student participation rate was quite large. Over the 12 weeks of the pilot, there were 245 students that were enrolled in those five courses that we offered the service to. 171 students visited at least once. So that's pretty good. 70% of the students who were enrolled over those 12 weeks tried it out. And remember, this is a limited pilot, so you're going to miss people just with scheduling. So this was actually quite dramatic. 17% of the students that came in actually went back and completed the evaluation survey, so that's not too bad for voluntary surveys. Single visits versus multiple visits. You see there, out of those 171 students that came and visited, almost all of them only came one time, so 92% of them only came once. But there was a group of people, there were 14 students who came back repeatedly. They sort of bought into this thing, and they were there every week. There were a couple of them in particular who always seemed to be online when you were. So that's the sort of interesting part that I wanted to get at, to see what students are coming back more than once, what is it about them that makes this appealing compared to those who just visit one time. And we'll get into some of those data in a minute. First, I'm going to do the evaluation part. Students, by and large, found it very good. So the people came back and evaluated this. So it was very easy to get started. So 97% said it was easy to get in. So there weren't a lot of barriers to getting this thing rolling. 90% found it easy to use Illuminate as a classroom. So the classroom environment was easy to use for them. I was worried about sound, and it was nothing to worry about. Turned out 97% said the sound was acceptable or better. So that was pretty good. The way people use their time inside Illuminate looked like this. Someone would log in, and typically they'd have to wait about 5 minutes to get to their turn. Okay, so the other students present, they'd have to wait a little bit. Average reported time spent on their question was about 7 minutes, and they'd give up the floor to somebody else. 70% found other students there when they logged in, and 67% stayed and watched or listened to the tutor going over questions. with the other students. And that's exactly what I was getting out of the vicarious learning. People like to sit and watch, and they say, oh, gee, there's another student out there having a similar problem. I'm not alone. This feels good. And then they stay and watch. So that was sort of predictable. Satisfaction levels really surprised me. There were a number of questions in the survey about how effective this technology was, and every question got 100% yes. It was just resounding. There were no negative hits on any of the surveys. Is it an effective teaching tool? Yes. Do you think this technology is helpful in learning chemistry at a distance? Yes. Would you use the online drop-in tutorial again? Well, yes. Remember, the people who filled this out include people who came back, as well as people who only got once. So everybody's saying they want to use this again. Okay. So even though they may not have come back in those 12 weeks, they would have liked to come back. Would you recommend using the online tutorial to someone you know? That's very indicative of how good it is, 100% said yes. And do you think it should be made available on an ongoing basis? Well, same thing. So very positive. The student comments give you a little richer information, because when people tell you in their own words what this is like, you sometimes learn new things. So I'm going to go through four comments selected from all of the qualitative responses. They're a little long, but they're very interesting. First one, watching and listening to other students' questions was a great learning experience. It was somewhat like sitting in a lecture hall listening to other students' questions after a lecture. I felt it was very worthwhile, and also, as a distance learning student, it made me set aside time for my chemistry course. So there's something maybe about the scheduling of a regular session with other people that people are drawn to. I really, really liked it. I found it very helpful both in getting my own questions answered and also when listening to other students' questions. Even to know they sometimes had the same problems I did with some concepts was helpful, or sometimes they thought of it in a different way, which was good to know and added to my understanding. We hear that sometimes when we're in the classroom as well, that hearing things a different way is a great way to learn. I enjoyed it very much. Being part of an actual tutor exchange made me feel like I was part of a class community. Until now, I felt very isolated while taking this course. Being online also meant that my questions are answered fairly immediately. Having to call and leave a message with my tutor and then wait for his response did not work well with me. So I really liked the online tutorial experience, and I'm disappointed that today is the last day for it. I actually got a lot of comments like that. The last day, I got flooded with emails from people. Start it up again, please, we need this. And the last one, I wish the online tutorial had begun months ago when I started taking these courses. I found it difficult to learn and study chemistry on my own. When I emailed my tutor, he was great in responding, but it's so much easier to ask a question and continue to ask questions via the online tutorial and get through a problem right away versus emailing back and forth and possibly taking days to understand a problem or concept. Now that is something that should ring true for any honest tutor, that this does happen where you're going back and forth. Sometimes there's a response from the tutor is, well, okay, are you asking this? Is this what your question really means? And then they come back and they say, yeah, well, that's right. And then you go back and you try to explain something, and then you say, well, that's not quite good enough, and then you have to go back and forth like this. You can get through a lot more on the spot in an online environment with that interaction. So there you go. Like I was mentioning earlier when I was discussing the survey, I wanted to look at any biases that were affecting student participation, in particular repeat student participation. And so there's some interesting data in this. I'll just go through this quickly. First of all, there was a bit of a gender bias. The way this graph works, the bar graph, over on the left, the green are female students, the white are the male students. The bars on the left are the entire chemistry population at the time. So, sorry, got a question in the room. The question was how the breakdown correlates between the entire population and the participants, is that right? Yeah, I'm just going to get to that. Okay. So you see the total population of chemistry students looks roughly like a 2-to-1 split between female and male, and that's sort of typical of AU. And you see students who participated at least one time, that's the next couple of bars, the ones labeled all participants. You see there's more females joining up at least one time compared to the men. But then when you get to the multiple visit group compared to the single visit group, you see that more men seem to come back, which I found a little surprising. I'm not sure what that means. Maybe someone who's an expert in this area can enlighten me a little bit. But there is something going on. We seem to attract more women to the tutorial initially, and then more men, or a greater percentage of men, come back. So interesting stuff there. I'd love to have some discussions with people. That's part of the reason for doing this talk. Next, this one is kind of surprising. You look at participation by age group. You can see the distribution for all of chemistry over on the left again. These are broken up into 20 and under. That's the black bar. The dark green is 21 to 25. The olive is 26 to 30. Light green, 31 to 35. And then the white is 36 or older. So you see we've got a large group of people in the 21 to 25 crowd. The students who joined at least one time, you can sort of see that we're getting older. The distribution is moving into the 26 to 30 group. See the olive bar getting bigger. Okay. But then you go to the multiple visits, and we've got a whole bunch of 30-somethings. It's as if the older students want to come back more often. You know, the typical adult learner is coming back compared to all the young folks that we would think we're more comfortable with the online world. So there's something funny going on, and maybe worth some more exploring. The participation by location was very telling about the scheduling of our sessions. And I'll actually talk about the scheduling for a second before I go over this. Our scheduling of 8 to 10 p.m. in Alberta was done to fit with individualized tutoring phone hours. Okay, so there's three tutors. Tuesday, Wednesday night are our main nights for tutoring, and we usually have phone hours in those prime evening hours. And so we juggled things a little bit, and we found a common time that would work for everybody of 8 to 10 as a supplement to our regular phone tutoring. So 8 to 10 is already getting a little late in Alberta. Okay, it's not so bad in BC, which would be 7 to 9, but if you're in the east, you're kind of out of luck, right? And if you look at this, that's exactly what the behavior turns into. All chemistry has a distribution where we've got more students in Ontario than in Alberta. So Alberta is the black, BC is the dark green, the light green is Ontario. And among the participants who came in and tried it out, you see we're getting more Alberta people. BC doesn't really change much. Ontario, we're losing folks. And then this other category is going up. Don't ask the question, because those students were all over the map. I tried to look for where they're located, and they're everywhere. It's not easy to correlate. But when we move to multiple visits versus single visits, you see it very clearly that BC and Alberta are preferred, and I think this is just because of the time slot. I received many emails from Ontario students saying, will you please move the time earlier, because we just can't do this. I got to work in the morning. I don't want to be on here at 11 o'clock. So I'm sympathetic. And this is difficult because in a country this size, somebody's going to get screwed with the time zone. It doesn't matter, right? There's always going to be something at the wrong time when it's live. So we did our best, and there may be a compromise on time sometime in the future if we do this. Okay. Student participation by course. I was looking into this because I thought for sure that there'd be more organic chemistry students in here than general. And someone in the room was laughing because they must know something about organic. Organic is incredibly visual. Everything they do involves a molecular structure or a synthetic set of reactions, for example. And I figured for sure you'd get a lot more organic folks, and that didn't happen. It looked like the distribution was roughly the same as for the regular course population. So these bars are just showing the numbers of students in the different courses, green being the entire chemistry population and white being the participants who came in. There's really no difference worth commenting on. The big difference, though, was that the students who came back multiple times tended to be taking more courses in chemistry. So of the multiple visit crowd, they tended, or for me, the average was 1.5 courses per student. The people who only came once, it was 1.1 courses per student. That makes sense. If you're taking more courses, you're going to be looking for more support. Okay. That's kind of a no-brainer. There's a question about how comfortable people were with technology, and you can see there's definitely a bias there, that the multiple visit group were more comfortable with technology. That's how they reported compared to the simple visits. Not very surprising there. And internet access was a possible issue. The multiple visit students, 100% of them had high speed. There was a slightly lower percentage among the people who visited only once, but not too much. Okay, and I actually couldn't tell you the percentage of students that have high speed among our total population of students, but I'm guessing it's up from 80-90%, maybe higher. Okay. So a quick summary of biases that were affecting repeat student participation. We've got that interesting gender bias where we're initially attracting more women, but a greater percentage of men come back. We're attracting more older students to come back repeatedly. There's that time zone effect, and number of chemistry students, pardon me, chemistry courses that are enrolled in, as well as a comfort level in technology. Okay. So that's how the project went. And the big question now is, where do we go from here? I've sort of been sitting on this for a while, not knowing what to do with it, because there's some very big challenges to be faced if we're going to move ahead with something like this being implemented at AU. This online drop-in tutorial is a very different model than the individualized study tutor model. You've got groups of students coming in to a tutor, and it's more like a classroom space rather than a one-on-one interaction, even though there is a one-on-one interaction, right? So it is very different. It could be used as a supplement to the IS tutor model, just like we did in the pilot, where you have a set of times during the week that are regular, and students can come in no matter who their tutor is and get some help and support. You could go further and go to something like a kind of online call center model. I don't know how that would work. I'm going to talk with Terry in business a little bit about this. There's possibilities there. The most tantalizing possibility, in my mind, is that Luminate is supported by Moodle. And we know we're moving to Moodle, so wouldn't it be fun to plug Luminate into there, and you've got a class that can go online with a tutor and go through materials, okay, and have a real interactivity going on. That could be really a lot of fun and really advance what we're doing. Okay, so quick little conclusions here. There was a very high degree of student satisfaction with the pilot project. Like I said, I had a lot of emails from students begging to bring this back because they really liked it and wanted to go in again. I would judge, based on the survey as well as tutor experiences in my own view, that Luminate is pretty good for this sort of application. It works quite well. It's got everything you need. It's got that whiteboard front and center. You've got an easy way to manage your participants and turn people's mics on and off as you see fit. And you've also got a little chat screen there where you can communicate. It works pretty well. And then we've already talked about our demographic differences there. I've got some links, like I promised, if you want to do some further surfing instead of reading. These days we surf. SmartThinking.com has got chat plus whiteboard commercial tutorial one that I showed earlier. Another more interesting application is something I found out after the pilot project was rolling. The Government of Ontario has something called their Independent Learning Centers, and it's run through TV Ontario. And it's an Ask a Teacher service where during the week, just like this pilot, students can go online to a whiteboard and there's a teacher online. And so students in grades 9 through 12 can do this. No matter where they are, they go on and they can get some help. So it's a great idea there that you might want to look into. OK. Okay, the important part, acknowledgements. There's some great people to thank for helping out with all of this. First of all, the tutors who participated in this were a lot of fun to work with and really open-minded to this new technology. It's Jim Robinson and Lois Brown. They're the two most experienced tutors in the chemistry area right now. Jim is an award-winning tutor. I think his wall is still just from his picture. Is outside on the wall. I was going to say his wall is on the picture, but that's not right. And Lois is a very good organic chemistry tutor who's been featured in chemical and engineering news for some of her online educational materials. So we've got very good people. Illuminate help was done by our Illuminate guru, Shubhash Shawasti. PSP surveyor help was done by Muli Huivi. He's over in CS. Learning Services tutorial helped out a lot with this in a number of ways. First, Cindy helped sort of stick handle the pilot project through because there's a QP article that says you've got to give them notice when you do a pilot. And Rochelle Reed was gracious enough to send me updated email lists every week, which can't be a fun task to do. So thank you to Rochelle. Institutional Studies was helpful in giving me some information on our chemistry students over that time period. And had some great discussions with some colleagues. Julie Peschke is our math coordinator, and she's really keen on whiteboard technologies in distance education. Conrad is in the room. He was helpful in implementing that project that Julie did. We had conversations. And then an MBE student named Steve Swettenham, who I happened to used to work with years ago. We all had some great discussions about this. And then finally to the University for Mission Critical Research Funding. I have to brag a little bit on that. We only spent $2,000 to do this. Okay. So it's amazing what you can accomplish with the tools and a little bit of support to get through it. So there you go. And thank you for your time. And we're open to questions. I think what I'm going to do for those of you online, oh, thank you, Cheryl, for the hand clapping. I'm going to go for questions in the room first, and then we'll take the online folks. Oh, yes, and the order from Alice here is you got to come to a mic so that the folks online can hear you. Okay. Okay, so we'll go Diane and Roger and Zilda.
Thanks, Walter. This is Diane. Well, I'm excited to see the presentation. I think the project was commendable. I have a couple of comments and a couple of questions. First of all, one of the reasons why I appreciate what you've presented so much is because your research fits into the totality of what we know about adult resistant training, in that your learners reported the fact that they do enjoy learning communally, that sense of being a part of the greater whole is very, very important to them. That in fact the technology and of all the technologies I use, which includes a lot of online platforms, I find the limit is trickier. So the fact that most of them didn't indicate a huge issue with technology, even though it was a limit, indicates to me that technology is never really the issue behind the training that it is, which is one of my favorite things to talk about. And the fact that the more adult and older learners see that routinely is also kind of surprising to people's style and tendency of adult learners. So this is just my comment about how it fits in generally what we know and what we know is what we know is actually what we know and what it is. The question, why wouldn't you continue this project because it seems to fit such a need and you've obviously done a really good job of it. Second question, were you able to capture or was there any significant difference or did you try to measure the final grades related mostly to the 14% of the folks who came back from the visit? And the third, more or less, middle research question, did you get informed consent to capture the data from the participants?
Lots of questions there. First of all, the question about sort of why we paused in continuing the project. A lot of it was just with what was going on in my own world. There was a lot of other tasks coming up. And so it went on hiatus, really, until now. But there are some big challenges in implementing this institutionally. sort of changing a whole bunch of tutors over into a new model that hasn't been explored completely is something I wasn't quite ready to get into at the time. That's really the main reason. It's a large task to change over a group of tutors. I've got 5 chemistry tutors now, so you have to change everybody's workload over dramatically, and that's not always easy. The second question I've already forgotten, Diane.
The correlation between final grades.
Right. I chose not to do a final grade study because you will introduce a bit of a confound into the data by people self-selecting to join the tutor or the tutorial. So I initially was going to, and I thought, nah, there's no real point in doing this. And yes, students were alerted that this was going to be collected and used in publication. So, if that's what you define as informed consent, yes.
So
Yeah, it was all sort of buried in the initial email.